Go on, the Ra.
The hell with O'Duffy.
Up the IRA.
The hell with the blue shirts.
Up Dev.
Beat them out of town.
Up the Republic.
Right, and those chants date back to the 1930s when emotions were running high, just a decade after the Civil War, which was, of course, still very much a recent memory. Katrina Crowe is here with this month's documents from the National Archives, which relate to 1934 and tensions between the IRA and the Blue Shirts. What was Ireland like in 1934? It's only 80 years ago.
It is only 80 years ago. And I suppose in choosing these documents, people may be getting a little fatigued with the whole decade of centenary. So I thought something else that might be have an anniversary. So 1934, we're 11 years away from the end of the Civil War, so it's still fresh in a lot of people's memories. The country had been ruled by Cumann na n-Éill since 1922 to 1932 for 10 years, and then Fianna Fáil began an uninterrupted period of 16 years in power.
But there had been a seamless transition, which I think a lot of people didn't necessarily expect.
There had been, and it is greatly to the credit of all concerned that that happened, particularly to W.T. Cosgrave, who wouldn't be everybody's favourite person, but he made sure that there was no army mutiny and that everything went as it ought to go. The decade is a really interesting decade. You've got things like the abdication crisis, you've got the 1937 Constitution, the 1938 Anglo-Irish Agreements, and the economic war, which is raging throughout it, causing all kinds of havoc to exports, which decrease by about three quarters to Britain, but which end in 1938.
Tell us then about the documents in the archives that address local tensions between the IRA and the Blue Shirts in that year, in 1934.
Well, what we have are the crime and security files of the Department of Justice, that most interesting of government departments, which are the files kept by the police reporting on what they saw to be political crime operating around the country. Now, I suppose what we've got to think about is, what was it like in the 1930s when there was no TV? A lot of people didn't have radios. If there was any chance of a row happening in the town at night, this would be good entertainment, apart from anything else it might be. There were definitely deep divisions between the IRA, which would have been the rump of the IRA left behind, who didn't join Fianna Fáil in 1927 or after the election, and the Blue Shirts, who were a new organisation, the Army Comrades Association, set up to support Fine Gael or Cumann na n-Éill speakers when they want to speak. So a lot of it is harmless. They burn down each other's dance platforms. They disrupt each other's meetings. They write horrible slogans on the roads in the middle of the night. They throw stones at each other. There's a lot of heckling, as we heard at the start, and it was much ruder than, by the way, in the way it was put across there. I know we're before the watershed, but they did say much ruder things. But I mean, Brandon O'Hare, for example, describes De Valera coming to small towns in Ireland, surrounded by sods of burning turf at twilight, wearing a long black coat and casting spells on the people in bad Irish, which I really love. On the other side, you would have had James Dillon, who would have been the premier orator of Fine Gael, making dramatic denunciations of the slaughter of the calves necessitated by the economic war. So plenty of food for thought for those there. It's mainly young men in the town. And one of the great things about these files is that you get lists of who all these young men were. One of the documents you'll be hearing from relate to Kilrush and County Clare, from whence my father came. So I was looking with some trepidation through the list to see were any of my relatives there. And to my almost disappointment, they weren't. They must have just stayed at home that night. But they're all named, and people can either take pride in it or not, depending on how they feel about these things.
And to what extent was this a proxy conflict in reality between, although it's the IRA versus the Blue Shirts, to what extent was it a proxy conflict between Fianna Fáil and Cumann na n-Éill supporters, or was it actually a fight between two extremist organisations in a decade renowned for extremism?
It's a mixture of both, really, in the sense that it was always clear that Fine Gael kind of liked the Blue Shirts and thought they were a useful thing to have, and made a severe case that they had to be there to protect them from being attacked by the IRA when they went out to make public speeches, which is one of the ways that they communicated to people. Now, De Valera tried to ban Blue Shirts, the wearing of Blue Shirts, with the Wearing of Uniform Restriction Bill in 1934, which everyone just ignored and continued to wear their Blue Shirts, because how can you ban Blue Shirts? I mean, they're everywhere.
Was there a definition of a blue shirt? Was it sky blue, or was it St. Patrick's blue?
Do you know, I haven't read the legislation, but I'd imagine anything from navy down to very faint pastel might have qualified. I met a young woman recently who told me that her great aunt in Wexford had a Blue Shirt uniform, which remained in the family and became a great hit on the disco floor in the 1980s. So there must have been something pretty cool about them. So in terms of your question, yes, about the extremes. Yes, extreme, but also, the, if you like, the outlying edges of the respectable parties that are now, well, Fianna Fáil is running the country, but Cumann na Gael has come through 10 years of power. And of course, they both end up, both of these factions, end up to some extent fighting in the Spanish Civil War, the Blue Shirts in the most horrendously stupid way, and having having shot some of themselves, coming back ignominiously, not having seen any action, just got as far as Lisbon. And the, it has to be said, some of the Republicans with great courage and many casualties on the Republican side.
Right. We'll hear some of the documents. This, for example, is a Garda report concerning the disruption of a Fine Gael meeting at Kilrush. You've talked about both Kilrush and disruption of Fine Gael meetings. On the 17th of June, 1934. Let's have a listen.
In reply to the Commissioner's Minute of the 29th of June, 1934, I beg to forward herewith list containing the names of all men who were noted as being guilty of disorderly conduct on the occasion of the meeting. In reference to that list, I beg to state that the only man who was observed throwing stones was number 3, Michael Devers. This man was seen definitely to throw 2 stones from the back of the crowd, but he was too far from the member of the Garda who observed him to do anything, while just immediately after the stones were thrown, the baton charge took place. Attempts to break the Garda cordons occurred on 2 occasions, the first being when the Blue Shirts arrived at the meeting and the second when they were leaving town again. The shouting consisted of expressions such as "To hell with O'Duffy," "To hell with the effing Blue Shirts," "Beat them out of town," "Come on lads and we'll kick the effers out of town," "The Blue Shirts will never hold a meeting in Kilrush," "Up Dev," "Up the IRA," "Up the Republic." In addition to this, there was a general din of shouting, booing, cheering and jeering.
Right, I think that gives us an idea of the kind of language that was being used at these meetings. This excerpt is from a report sent to the Garda Commissioner concerning IRA intimidation of one Lawrence Fagan in Limerick on the 20th of November 1934, when he was called to the front door of his house.
When he reached the door, he saw a man standing outside the door and 3 other men on the street. Just as the man who was standing outside the door was about to address Fagan, the other 3 men came up the steps. The first man said, "Are you Mr. Fagan?" Mr. Fagan said, "Yes." The man then said, "Mr. Fagan, you get out of town within 48 hours. IRA orders." They then walked away, and Mr. Fagan called the man who addressed him back and asked him why, who is in charge. The man then said, "Don't you mind, you get out." Another member of the party said, "There is nothing for you here. You're not welcome in Limerick." They then walked towards the Lyric Theatre.
Why was Lawrence Fagan targeted? Who was he?
He worked for the Irish Press, which has only been up and running for a short time. De Valera's newspaper, notoriously and interestingly. And it's assumed that these characters, there's a marvellous description of one of them further on, they had clean-shaven, dark hair, blue eyes, fresh complexion, thin face, discoloured teeth, Limerick accent, and he wears a brown tweed overcoat, a soft trilby hat, a soft collar and a dark tie. All of these keep their hands in their pockets throughout this encounter, indicating there might be something more than a pack of cigarettes in there, the more to scare Mr. Fagan. So it's thought by the policeman in question that they wanted him out because they felt that he was down to take a job that one of them should rightly have got, being supporters of the soldiers of the Legion of the Rear Guard. And instead, here's this blow-in arriving down to take the bread out of their mouths. In fact, it was explained that Mr. Fagan was only there on a training course. But that's not the kind of thing you would say to 4 fellas standing at the door with their hands in their pockets when they arrive up. One assumes that the police indicated that to the people in question. And I suppose, in a way, they just say they're going to try and track the people responsible, that they can identify the main ringleader. Generally, the police reaction in most of these files is not to wet the bed, like, just let's not make martyrs out of these guys. Unless there's something egregiously dreadful going on, they're not going to up the ante and make things worse. And I suppose, given recent events, it's interesting to look at that sort of calmness of approach to these things. Maybe nowadays that would be looked at as failing to investigate these cases properly. But in those days, it was probably intentionally done not to up the ante and raise temperatures at a time when things could easily have got out of hand.
Because the man at the helm, as far as the Blue Shirts was concerned, had been a Garda Commissioner, commissioner who was sacked, wasn't given the option of resigning. That was Eoin O'Duffy, who had been in a previous life. Tell us.
Chief of Staff of the IRA in 1922. And of course, the Chief of Staff of the IRA now in 1934 is Moss Toomey, who's Chief of Staff for that short period, who's interned, which of course is what De Valera does to these people, interns them in 1936, get them off the streets and stop the nonsense. And when he comes out in 1939, he looks around him, doesn't like what he sees, leaves the IRA and sets up a sweet shop in O'Connell Street where he happily lived for the rest of his life. Not the kind of image we normally associate with Chiefs of Staff of the IRA.
No, definitely not. And Dave texts from Kilrush, not from Kilrush. He says he's originally from Kilrush. He says, sounds like not much has changed in 80 years. Katrina, thank you very much indeed for joining us. And thanks to our readers, Faulkner Othersgill and Richie Byrne. Those documents that we've been talking about and others relating to tension between the Blue Shirts and the IRA in 1934 are on our website, so you can take a look there.